Welcome to the Project Sleep Podcast. For those of you who've listened before, you might be expecting to hear from Julie Flygar, Project Sleep's founder and CEO. But for this special series of podcasts on sleep apnea topics, I'll be your host. I'm Emma Cooksey, the Sleep Apnea Program Manager here at Project Sleep, and I'm so glad you're here. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. We created the Sleep Apnea Squad series to allow listeners to dive deeper into specific topics relevant to living with sleep apnea. For more on today's topic, please check out our corresponding toolkit, which is available for free on our website to download, print, and share. The link to the toolkit and other Sleep Apnea Squad topics is in the show notes, or you can find the Sleep Apnea Squad page at project-sleep.com. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to consult your own medical team while making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a rating or a review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. So without further ado, here's today's Sleep Apnea Squad episode. So welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm really excited for today's session on sleep apnea in kids. And we haven't done anything about pediatrics yet, so I'm really excited to talk about how sleep apnea can show up differently in kids and just what parents can look for. And so without further ado, I'm going to get on to introducing our guests. So we're going to start with Nathan. So Nathan Pounds is a Springfield, Missouri-based respiratory therapist and educator who serves as laboratory coordinator for the respiratory therapy program at Ozarks Technical Community College. His oldest son has a complex medical history that includes failure to thrive, severe asthma, and obstructive sleep apnea. And because his presentation was not typical, he and his spouse navigated a long diagnostic journey before their son ultimately received a sleep study and an accurate diagnosis. That experience drives Nathan's commitment to raising awareness about pediatric sleep apnea so that families and clinicians can recognize atypical presentations sooner, reduce delays to diagnosis, and ensure children receive the care they need to thrive. So welcome, Nathan. I'm so pleased that you're here to share your story.
Thank you, Emma.
So we're going to just also introduce Dr. Afolabi Brown, and we're hoping that she'll be joining us here shortly. So Dr. Funke Afolabi Brown is a triple board certified sleep medicine physician. As a physician in practice for almost two decades and a mom of two who struggled with sleep issues, she fully understands the impact of sleep deprivation on our mental, physical, and emotional health. As a result, she has dedicated her career to helping others optimize and achieve restful sleep. Dr. Brown is a member of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine and the American Thoracic Society. She has served on several committees locally and nationally. She's also on several advisory boards, including our expert advisory board at Project Sleep. So we're so grateful to Dr. Afolabi Brown for her support. Dr. Brown obtained her sleep medicine training at the University of Pennsylvania and was a member of the faculty at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia until recently when she started her own practice. So welcome to Dr. Afolabi Brown, who hopefully will be joining us shortly. So I think I just kind of had a couple of like a slide with a little overview. So these are probably some of the things that are going to come up today as we're having these discussions. So we're going to be talking a little bit about sleep apnea and how it shows up in kids versus adults. So often it can look quite different. I think when we look at adults with obstructive sleep apnea, we're often focusing on daytime sleepiness and some of these other symptoms, and it might look quite different in children. So that's something to look out for. Another thing I already mentioned is just that parents might need to advocate for their kids to get the best care. So we're going to talk a little bit about what to do if you suspect your child might have sleep apnea. And then also a little bit about how to get prepared for overnight testing. That can sometimes be a bit of a challenge. And we're going to touch on the treatment options available. And I think if we just go to you, Nathan, first, and if you want to just kind of share a bit about your own family's journey with this, and just kind of start out and just explain a little bit about your family and your son and what you noticed there.
Yeah, well, thank you again for having me. My oldest son, so I have four children. The two oldest are foster and adopted. My oldest son, when he came to live with us, he was 2 days old. And the first thing he did was went apneic. So he stopped breathing and he went cyanotic. So he turned blue, went right back to the hospital. They couldn't quite figure out what was going on. But come to find out later on, we had a lot of medical complications. Particularly, we had a lot of pulmonary complications. And so we found out through some time that he had asthma. He has extrinsic asthma, so he has allergies. And so we would deal with that. We had multiple hospitalizations for pneumonia. So we're going through this as a young child, you know, toddler into school. But also, this kid is just bouncing off the walls, just energy all of the time. And, you know, starting to present as that ADHD child that you expect. But he's also small. He's this little guy. He's on a growth hormone. He's been on a growth hormone since 2019. And so at 4 years old, he started on a growth hormone. And he's doing these things during this time. He's doing these things of like struggling with his sleep. We do start noticing this early on. He's not staying in bed. But he's our first child. We don't really know. He's our first child. We're just thinking it's like night terrors, what's going on? But he gets so sweaty. He gets sweaty and he'd get up a lot and we'd take him back. He'd have a hard time going to sleep over and over again. And so my wife, who we didn't mention, is a speech language pathologist. And she also knew an orofacial myologist who came to us and said at one point during a conversation, of have you looked into sleep apnea? And then after that, and we can share some more details in a little bit, but after that, we did start that conversation. And we started that conversation with our primary care provider of like, can we look into this? This kid's got all of these signs and symptoms of just something being disturbed, something going on. And so after a while, we did end up getting a sleep study done. It was actually in November of 2022. We got a sleep study done and we had to advocate for this quite a bit because he wasn't snoring. I sat in his room and like watched him sleep multiple times when we started to talk about this. And I was like, this kid's not snoring, but he's moving, he's wiggling, he's in weird sleep positions. He's, again, sweaty, all of this stuff. We get a sleep study done. Sure enough, AHI, 8, moderate sleep apnea, pediatrics. We go to the ENT. We do an adenoid and tonsillectomy. The physician's like, this has a 50% chance of working because I don't really see any issues here. We get a follow-up sleep study done later that spring in 2023. He slept better. His sleep apnea, his AHI was actually 12.1. which then is severe sleep apnea. He got his CPAP in July of 2023. And I will never forget, sorry, this always gets me. I will never forget that morning that he woke up 2023, 8 years old, and he wakes up after wearing that CPAP all night and just has a smile on his face. And this is a kid like we had to like drag out of bed, you know, we're fighting every day. And he's like, I feel so good. And just smiled. And I mean, my wife and I both just like lost it because this kid had been dealing with this probably his entire life in some way or the other. And so, he felt so much better.
Yeah. So thank you so much for sharing that. So Dr. Appleby Brown, oh, yes. Welcome. So we started with But we introduced you, so we've done that, but we're just talking a little bit about Nathan's journey with his son. And then I would love to hear your input too. But Nathan, so you, when you first went to the doctor and you noticed that there was some things going on with your son, you said he was 4 years old and it took until he was eight to get a diagnosis and treatment.
Yes, there was a lot of other things. Like I said, I mean, kid's got asthma. He's failure to thrive, and he presented as that ADHD, which, you know, in the foster care world, there's the talk of like, well, is it trauma? Is it autism? You know, we're doing some of these things alongside this evaluation. And we keep coming back to this, but his sleep sucks. Like what could be, could that...
Did you find that the pediatrician was asking questions about his sleep or no?
No, that was totally what we brought. And then the pediatrician did send us over to a pediatric pulmonologist, and the pediatric pulmonologist kind of questioned if it was behavioral, like kind of gave us some like, I think you need to do a better job of sleep hygiene, which, not boasting, but boasting, we do a pretty good job of sleep hygiene. You know, we follow all the rules, keep routine bedtime, no screens, reading books. I mean, all of those kind of things. We'd been trying to do that because of the other issues. He was small and things like that. What really got us, and what Emma and I unfortunately talked about last time, was during that same process, our insurance flipped. Insurance flipped, and we got sent to a different pediatric pulmonologist who did not give us great feedback. First told me he wouldn't talk to me about asthma and sleep apnea as a possibility. Just he said he wouldn't. I was like, isn't there an overlap that maybe we could discuss? But he said, no, I'm here to talk about one or the other. You pick. So I chose sleep apnea. And he said, well, it sounds like it's behavioral. I'm not joking you. He told me to flip the door around, flip the door handle around, and lock him in his room to teach him to stay in his bed. So is like the perfect advocacy moment of that is wrong in your soul. We said, thank you. When I went to the manager to ask for a follow-up, I said, we won't be coming back.
So this is probably a really good time to ask Dr. Afolabi Brown to kind of explain a little bit about sleep apnea in kids and how it can, like what parents can be looking for and how it might show up differently. I hear a lot of this ADHD type behavior that goes missed.
Yeah, no, sorry, I'm in transit, but I'm here. And I caught the tail end of your story, your son's story, Nathan. And I'm, my goodness, I have like chills because stuff like that just breaks my heart, right? I'm a parent as well. And imagine being, that's gaslighting, like of the highest order. But I thank you for advocating for him. So back to your question, Emma. Yes, this is the issue. This is one problem that we're faced with within the pediatric space. I mean, even with adults as well, right? Undiagnosed sleep apnea, right? You have sleep disruption because you have pauses, repeated pauses in breathing during sleep. And the way I tell my patients is imagine that every time your child or you are about to get into restorative sleep, your brain's like, oh, absolutely not. Because every time you try to do that, we'll stop breathing. So we're going to have to choose one. We either sleep or we breathe. And the brain will always choose breathing. And so they sleep enough, they practice all the right sleep hygiene, they get, you know, 9, 10, 11 hours of sleep, and they still may either feel tired, but for many kids, they might not actually feel tired. They might actually be hyper because they now start to fight that tiredness because it's foreign to them. You hardly hear a child say, oh, dad, I'm feeling sleepy. No, you see them bouncing off the walls. You see them become very impulsive. You see them become, you know, have these tantrums that are coming out of nowhere, it seems, because they become so emotionally labile. You see inattentiveness and difficulties with maybe even some basic skills, like in school. Sometimes we now see like kids with sleep disordered breathing do poorly in terms of their grades and school performance. What other disorder mimics that, you know, or what other condition mimics that, right? Well, ADHD. So we go quickly. You can imagine you have a 10, 15 minute visit with your doctor, and in your case, even shorter, where you're told to either pick one or the other. Meanwhile, they're all united. It's quick to say, what's quick? Okay, ADHD, you get a medication, get out of my office next, right? So this whole thing, and the parents, come to the doctor, or to the hospital, or to the clinic to say, I need help. We know something is wrong. And so now they're telling you, nope, this is what we think it is. You know, you would assume that they know what they're saying. And so now you set this child up for maybe, you know, long-term issues with different medications and things like that. So we see that it's so closely tied. And this is one thing I tell my patients and, you know, even when I talk to people, wherever, is if your child is undergoing a diagnosis for some kind of neurodivergent condition, autism, ADHD, learning, dyslexia, whatever it is, before anybody moves near them with any type of medication or even as part of their evaluation, a comprehensive sleep evaluation is needed. It is so critical because there are kids I have shaved off. I've gotten off multiple medications because it turned out it was untreated sleep apnea or insomnia due to some other condition. So, I'm going to just stop there because you've got me riled up.
So we talked a little bit about the way it shows up in terms of ADHD type symptoms during the day. What should people look for at night while their child's sleeping? Nathan had kind of mentioned this, like, sweaty up and mm-hmm. down. Like, is there anything else you should be looking for?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, typically you'd see snoring, but the type of snoring you just have to pay attention to. It's not necessarily, it may not be. In some situations, you might have loud snoring, gasping. Like, people will say, oh my goodness, this child sounds like a freight train is passing through the house. But sometimes you just see maybe softer snoring. Again, depending on how strong their upper airway tone is. You need relative strength in that upper airway tone to have snoring. But snoring is one of the things. Sometimes gasping, pauses in breathing, restlessness during sleep. So lots of kids just kind of moving around is really in that effort to breathe and keep their airway open. Night sweats, you will see. You might see kids changing the position. So suddenly they start to adapt to kind of open up their airway. And so they might have what we call neck hyperextension because they're trying to get that air in. They're air hungry. You also will see sometimes bed wetting. And we might see a child who maybe was dry now starts to wet the bed. So that might be something else you'll see. Struggling, increased work of breathing while they're sleeping. So those are things that you would see, typically maybe one or two or all of those symptoms. Mouth breathing, that's a big one we see a lot of as well, where these children by default start to breathe with their mouth open. So that's also another common.
We should just cover is not the normal way to breathe.
No,
and we just actually did a session on mouth taping where we had a myofunctional therapist, or Nathan said orofacial myologist, because they, I think, either term. And so she was just kind of explaining that normal breathing in anyone, but especially in children, if you're watching, should be quiet and with their mouth closed and through their nose. And so if it's not that, like, it's worth kind of paying attention to. So we've kind of covered like how this might show up in daytime and nighttime. So another thing, I think Nathan, you kind of explained this, but I wanted to kind of explain to people about the number of different specialists they might see, right? So you talked about going to a pediatrician, and then you also saw an ENT surgeon and also a pulmonologist. Because I think sometimes for parents, that can be a challenge to kind of know where to go first and what order to do things in.
And to add another one is orthodontics.
Right.
We also went to orthodontics to see about that. And so I'll let Dr. Brown speak more to this.
I think this is where it gets very confusing. You know, I may be biased, but I think a sleep specialist, a sleep physician is almost like a quarterback. We kind of help field because each and every one of those specialists can help. They have a role. So in terms of the people that you may encounter on your child's sleep journey, of course, hopefully the pediatrician, right? But sometimes that might not even happen. Pediatrician, sleep physician. The dentist, because sometimes it's the dentist. I've seen now I'm doing a lot of work with a lot of dentists, and it's the dentist that looks in the mouth for the very first time, and they're like, oh my goodness, those tonsils are coming at me. Or, you know, there's a lot of, there's a lot of cobblestoning in the back of the throat, or the tongue looks large, or so that's another one. And then the orthodontist, because, you know, you might consider palate expansion, that's a treatment option. And then, you know, the myofunctional therapists, you know, we're really starting to see that these exercises can actually improve the strength and the tone of the upper airway. I should mention absolutely right at the, close to the very top would be an ENT doctor, right? An ear, nose, and throat doctor, because the most common reason why children have sleep apnea is big tonsils or adenoids. These are the tissues at the back of your throat and at the back of your nose. So the ear, nose, and throat doctor usually kind of helps with that. And then, of course, most sleep doctors also will be, you know, have experience with things like CPAP, or you might need to see a pulmonologist or somebody who's experienced with CPAP, because CPAP or continuous positive airway pressure therapy is definitely also an option. So you can see there's so many layers to it, and it can be very overwhelming. And depending on who you're talking to, they're kind of looking through their own lens, which right. is why I feel like seeing a sleep doctor kind of helps feel like, okay, this is the reason why your child is having sleep apnea. I can see big tonsils. I think you need to see ENT. Or, yeah. oh my goodness, that high arch palate, it looks like we should see the orthodontist. Or, you know, we're doing all that, it seems there's a tongue tie. I think we have a role where the myofunctional therapist may play a role, you know? So I feel like that kind of helps with sort of gatekeeping who you need to see.
Yeah, I really like that. So mm-hmm. I feel like every single topic we ever have, I have my own personal take on it. But my youngest daughter, so I never had any intervention of any kind as a child. And so that's kind of how I think I developed into the poster child for sleep apnea. So I had huge tonsils that were never taken out, and terrible mm. allergies, and really bad mouth breathing, all the things. Yeah. So I was very aware when my children were small of how they were breathing at night and whether there was anything to be done and looking for issues. And so my youngest daughter was fine up until about the similar age that you were talking about, Nathan. So about that sort of 4 or 5 age, I started noticing she was really sweaty and always like tangled up in her bedclothes in the morning, and just very tossy turny, and her tonsils were huge. So we actually didn't, I went to the pediatrician and I said, like, I mean, I was ready to be like, this is what we're doing, people, let's get on it, you know. And so the pediatrician basically took one look at her tonsils, like you were saying, and said, wow, those tonsils are huge, and directly sent us to the ENT surgeon. So for my daughter, she had a really good outcome with having the adenoids and tonsils taken out. She pretty soon after that operation, she started breathing normally through her nose with her mouth closed. No more sweaty, you know, and she just generally like seemed a lot happier and did much better. So I think it's just one of these things where it depends on what exactly is going on, like you were saying, yeah. the individual child. So the other thing I think that I wondered, Nathan, if you can maybe speak about a little bit, is this idea of having to advocate for your child. Like, I think that sometimes, you know, I hear stories quite a lot of people taking their child to the pediatrician and being told, you know, don't worry about it. It's normal, you know, and they really feel in their gut that it's not normal. So can you maybe speak a little bit to that and how you've kind of managed having to like really push back and advocate for your child?
Yeah, I think it's multifold. I think first and foremost, my first opinion is have that primary care provider that you really trust, that you've built that relationship with, that you really trust that they hear you. Because when that PCP hears you, because a lot of times they're the gatekeeper, right? They're the one to help me get to the sleep doctor, to the pulmonologist, to the ENT. And if they're a person that is actively listening to you, that you don't feel gaslighted by, that you feel like you can speak to and they will hear you, that's, I think, crucial base right there. And then the other part for advocating is using well-informed sources. Well, we won't go down that road, but using well-informed
sources. Don't just show up on social media and accept what the first person you see on the topic says. That's what you're saying.
The first thing you Google, the first thing generative AI pops out.
Right.
You need to go to credible sources to find information about this. And that's why you have to lean on other people. That's why the orofacial myologist, I was like, you're a person who knows more about this. Let me lean into you. I continue to advocate. I just recently advocated to switch masks because I watched an American Thoracic Society lecture on refractory OSA post adenoid and tonsillectomy and how a particular mask can change the facial structure of a growing child. Yeah. And I took that to my sleep doctor and I said, hey, let's talk about that. She's like, oh, that's cool. Let's change the mask. Yeah. That is all just from being well educated yourself. And that's hard to do for some people. And I get it. Where do you go? Where do you look? And I think maybe Dr. Brown could speak to some good things for this for sleep. I would, again, like I lean into the American Thoracic Society and the American Association for Respiratory Care, just because that's my wheelhouse. But I'd love to hear your thoughts, Dr. Brown.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. And I think, like you said, I think reinforcing that fact that an established, you know, a pediatrician that you trust, I think that's important. If you don't feel heard, move, find somebody. There are phenomenal pediatricians that are out there. And so you just need to find the right fit for you. In terms of sources, you know, I'm a pulmonologist and a sleep physician. So the ATS is great. And they also have patient educational materials, which are phenomenal. And the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, like the ASM is incredible. Project Sleep is fantastic. You know, there's just so many legitimate resources out there, depending on. And what I love about Project Sleep is there are humans who are, I mean, of course, all ATS, ASM as well, but with Project Sleep is so geared towards the patients that even if you have an issue and you don't feel like the resource or the material that's on the website is not answering your question, they could point you to the right direction, which I think is phenomenal. Like, who does that? That's incredible. So I think if you use those tools, and like Nathan mentioned, please don't go to Dr. Google. Absolutely not. It's like, it just pulls everybody's opinions. And the fact that you have somebody on Instagram who has 100,000, 200,000 followers does not make them the authority, right? So find credible sources. I think social media is the way people are consuming information now. So we're not going to discredit that. But before you go grabbing that reel, I want you to look and say, what's the credentials here? Yes. Where did they get their training? What, you know what I mean? Like,
because I feel like you're an example of someone really active on social media, but it's pretty easy to see that you're board certified and where you trained.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like, I think that there's just a lot of people where they're not front and center with that information. Mm. And if they're not sharing it, then there's probably a reason why.
Yes. You know, so I think you can find some credible tools on social media, but again, like, look at where are they coming from? What is their expertise? What is their background? I think this is important because now it's just a free for all, right? Anybody can get up. Now you can figure out how to get 100,000 of followers and call it a day. And that's not enough. So the Respiratory Care Society, I forget the acronym too, is phenomenal in terms of like, okay, practically, what do we need to do? So you cannot go wrong with all those resources I've listed as a start.
Are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
So one of the things that we didn't really dig into was, Nathan, can you speak to us a little bit about the actual testing for obstructive sleep apnea, what that looks like for children? Because I know, like, now I think there's some confusion around. A lot of adults will start with a home test, but with children, it's different. So can you maybe like talk a little bit about what that experience was like with your son?
Yeah. So you go to the hospital, usually you're at a sleep center and you go into a room. It's tried to be set up kind of like a hotel room. There's usually a bed, there's two beds in there. So you're going to go sleep there sleep there with your child as well. But before they get to sleep, right, there's going to be the technician, the polysomnography technician is going to come in, and they're going to gear them up. They've got all these electrodes that they're going to put on their head, and they're going to put, you know, things in their nose. They're going to put a strap across their chest. And so before you do that, you have to talk to them, right? You've got to be telling them beforehand, like, hey, buddy, or hey, sis, this is what we're going to do. This is what it's going to be like. Our sleep center had a video that they actually sent to us prior. Great resource. It showed what they were doing. It talked about it, how we're going to sleep, those kind of things. So if your site doesn't show that, like, find something like that on YouTube.
There's actually a really good book aimed at kids that are going to have a sleep study.
So just communicate, because you want them to be as comfortable as possible so they actually sleep, right?
Right.
That's the big goal, is you want them to sleep. And so it's just communicating with them, helping them feel safe, helping them feel comfortable with it, because it's going to be awkward. It's going to be weird. They're going to have this whole thing of wire hair, something around their chest. And there's video cameras you can kind of see in their room, because they're watching you sleep in that other room. You know, there's someone in there, there's a technician in there the entire night watching as you sleep. Yeah. And so again, it's just, I feel like it's communication, communication, communication.
And so as far as, so you shared earlier that your son eventually, after going through this kind of journey, started CPAP in the end. So what was that? Like, we've talked a little bit, we did a whole session on making CPAP comfortable earlier in the year. And so I know even from adults' point of view, it can be a challenging therapy to get used to. Are there any particular tips or information you have for parents that are going through that, trying to get their child adjusted?
Yeah. So finding the mask that works, right? Finding the setup that works for them. And then what we did is, that first day that we got it, we set it up in the living room on a table next to us, and we watched a movie together just so he could kind of have it on and fiddle with it. It put him to sleep. Within 20 minutes, he was asleep. And I was like, we're on to something.
Yeah.
But just kind of making it that normal thing, having it out there so they could fidget with it, play with it. And I will tell you, I have the experience of one, but he is so compliant because it helps him. He wears it 10 hours a night, 7 days a week, and he has since July of 2023. So again, like, getting them to know that that's going to help them feel better, as long as it's working. You know, I'm sure that other people have experienced this. You know, most of your CPAP machines now actually are auto PAP, right? They fluctuate between pressures, and so making sure that pressure is appropriate, talking to your sleep doctor. If it's not, make sure that they have those things set up to be the appropriate pressure for that child.
And I think sometimes people overlook that's a kind of, even adults I talk to, that's, you know, kind of like, it's not an immediate thing where it's all perfectly set up and you're going to take to it immediately for a lot of people, right? There's going to be a back and forth discussion with your doctor, and there might be adjustments and a little period to adjust. So that is really normal if people are experiencing that. I know one other thing that you had mentioned, which I just wanted Dr. Afolabi-Brown to kind of talk about a little bit, that you talked about the moderate and severe scale. And I think sometimes that's confusing for people because it's different from in adults. So what we talk about as being severe in an adult is a different number. So I don't know if you want to just kind of share a little bit about that, Dr. Afolabi-Brown.
Yeah, so the reason why we get the sleep study is one, to figure out if the child has sleep apnea or not, and also grade the severity. And so you have mild, you have what we call primary snoring, which is still also abnormal, right? Any type of noise. So you might have a child who has a sleep study and the sleep apnea index is not high enough to qualify as apnea, but primary snoring is still something that is treatable. And then you have what we call mild sleep apnea. Usually we're looking at the apnea, which is the number of pauses you have, and the hypopneas, which is the number or decrease in the flow of air that you're having. You look at that number and divided by the number, that number over the course of the night divided by the number of hours of sleep to have the apnea hypopnea index. And so for mild, we usually will say anywhere from 1.5 to about 5 events an hour. And then for moderate, usually we'll say 5 to 10 events an hour. And then greater than 10, we consider severe. Mm-hmm. Now, you also have to look at that, but you also have to look at what is it? What is the consequence of that? And this is the piece that I think a lot of people miss. Because even if you have mild apnea, but your oxygen levels are dropping to 70s, well, I'm going to act very aggressively. I don't care if it's mild.
Yes.
Or you have what we call sleep fragmentation, which you're just rotating through different cycles of sleep very rapidly. Even if it's mild, we're going to work very aggressively. So there's that index. And that's just something, that's an altar I would beg people not to die on. Yes. Because beyond the index, you might have kids who have profoundly severe. I have kids with an apnea index in the 60s and 70s. And you would have no clue there was anything going on. They are just fine. They just breathe noisy. And then you have some kids with an apnea of 3, and it's like the world is about to end.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you got to look at the kid in front of you. You got to look at everything, the oxygen burden, the fragmentation. This is why this is a whole thing when it comes to looking at
Yeah. So and that's it's so really funny because I feel like that's such a, like we're talking about that a lot with all these conversations around adult sleep apnea, where, you know, you talk to people all the time where mild doesn't mean mild symptoms or mild, you know, impacts on your life and your ability to be with your family and work and all the things. It's just like this number. So yeah. So probably let's not get too fixated, just in case people get results and, you know, I don't know, they maybe have sleep apnea themselves and they don't recognize the pediatric scale as being different. So yeah. Is there a particular, I was just going to ask, we already kind of touched on it, but are there particular times when you're referring people to orthodontics or to sort of airway dentists versus like you're able to just kind of like look and assess? Or because I feel like that's, this whole area feels like it's moving very quickly and changing and there's new research and it's a lot for parents to keep up with, I think.
Yeah, I think that's really the key here, right? I mean, there are some slam dunk, right? You have big tonsils staring at you. You have a child who's snoring. Sometimes you may be able to get them straight to ear, nose, and through a doctor. Like the pediatrician can refer them. And maybe after they take those tonsils and adenoids out, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. That's great. That's the most straightforward one that most people just hope for. But the way it works from a, you know, as a sleep physician is when these patients come to see me, first we're looking at a comprehensive history, right? What was their nutrition like? What was their birth like? What was diet like? Any facial abnormalities I'm seeing? Do they have an open mouth posture? Do they have what we call adenoid facies? Maybe they have a lot of allergies. So because of that, they've been chronically breathing out of their mouth. So, and then when I'm looking at that, do they have a tongue tie? Because sometimes if you have a tongue tie, it's really limiting the movement of your tongue and the ability to sit on your hard palate. And as a result of that, you might start to have changes in your face because your airway is building differently. So when I see those things and I'm looking at the big tonsils or maybe the tonsils are not so big, I get a sleep study. And then from there, I can now decide, oh, wow, you do have, you know, a role. ENT has a role to play. Let's go to ENT and you circle back with me. So you get the tonsils and adenoids out. We check again. Are there issues still going on? Especially if it's somebody that I feel like may qualify for maybe palatal expansion or things like that. So from there, we can now move forward and say, okay, maybe we need to see you, have you see an orthodontist. And we're now seeing there's now some research. Again, the orthodontic field is relatively new. We're really just getting, there's a rapid evolution in terms of the research. But we're now seeing that there may be what we call interceptive orthodontists, where you can actually start to have these kids expanded relatively early to really give the airway enough space to grow.
Yeah.
And so from there, we can now move towards that. There are situations, though, when the ear, nose, and throat doctor goes and sees and they're like, there's really nothing to take out. Then I know that that's where I'm probably going to go towards. But then the severity also, you know, is there a role for CPAP? So those are the kind of things we're sort of triaging when we see these patients, when we get the sleep study based on, you know, how severe their symptoms are, how severe the sleep apnea is. We can now decide, okay, ear, nose, and throat first. Circle back. You're still symptomatic. Okay, maybe we'll go to orthodontics, or we're really struggling here. Let's get you on CPAP in the interim.
I think also there's the thing where I've talked to some parents where they're doing expansion, but their child's also on CPAP at the same time.
Exactly.
Because, like, they want to make sure that they're getting enough oxygen to their brain, but they also are taking, you know, or maybe seeing a myofunctional therapist as well, you know?
Yeah, because the interceptive orthodontics takes a while. So am I going to have that child sat in the 80s until for 6 months? No. So that's always a great bridge. Yeah. Sometimes it's a little bit of medication management. Sometimes it's myofunctional therapy. Sometimes it's CPAP. Again, really finding what gives that child the resolution that they need. I think the key is follow-up. Make sure you keep coming back. Please make sure, because we can then troubleshoot with you to figure out, how does your child feel? How do you feel? What does your home environment look like? What do they look like during the day? If things are not where they need to be, then let's introduce something else to see if that's something that would help. And I think that's really
every
key.
Single parent watching this is going to wish you were their doctor. I'm just saying.
No, it really, because it's such a big thing. Like, just keep showing up. Don't stop, right? Like,
and also that thing, like, I don't know whether it's because I grew up in Scotland, but I think we always like had this kind of cultural thing of, if you go to the doctor and they say something, that's just the end of it. And I really, the more and more people I talk to, like, to really get to the outcomes you want, sometimes you're going to have to, you know, change doctors or see multiple different specialists, and it's okay.
Yep.
Whatever's right for your family. So thank you both so much. This has been an absolute pleasure for me. And I know a lot of people watching will find it really helpful. So I've got a few. Was there any last comments before we go, Nathan?
The only other comment I was going to just make note of is, like I had mentioned, my son was failure to thrive, and he's been on growth hormone this entire time. And do you know what happened to his growth velocity after he had been on the CPAP for a few months? And so, you know, that was just another thing that tells me, like, his body was being inhibited by his sleep.
Yeah, growth. So that's one thing, like, people don't realize that sleep plays such an important role in growth hormone, right?
Yeah. I mean, growth hormone is released during deep sleep. Again, your child gets robbed of that if they have untreated sleep apnea. And so because of that, they just don't get that benefit. Now he gets restorative sleep because his apnea is treated. You're going to see a difference. And so imagine, we've gone all the way to growth hormone, which is like sometimes weekly, daily shots for something that we could have. But I'm so glad he's better. That's what matters.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you got there in the end, Nathan. Yeah. Like, it's really... Yes. That's great. Well, thank you.
And I hope more people do.
Yes, for sure. Well, hopefully, I mean, it's always that thing of, like, if just one person sees this and they recognize some of those symptoms in their child, and instead of going on social media and saying, isn't my kid cute and funny because they're snoring, they then take that to their doctor and actually start this process to try and get answers. As we've been talking, I was thinking of a couple of books and other things that I'm going to add in the toolkit. So Dr. Afolabi Brown was talking a little bit about some of the things she's looking for in tongue ties and, you know, the shape of people's palates and that kind of thing. So there's a doctor called Dr. Zaghi, who is an ENT surgeon in California, who put together a sort of screener called Ferris 6, and there's a pediatric version and an adult version. It's totally free, and it really was made in the first instance for dentists who didn't specialize in airway and these kind of issues, but it can be really helpful for parents, right? It shows you, like, what do we mean when we say big tonsils? So it has pictures of, this is what tonsils at the different grades look like. So I think that's really useful. There's also the Children's Airway First Foundation, who are looking a lot more at what Dr. Afolabi Brown was explaining about optimal airway development and craniofacial development and that kind of thing. So they're really looking at more of a preventative kind of, you know, looking at very small children and making sure their airways are developing correctly. So I think that they have some interesting resources. And then I can't help but plug my own podcast, but on Sleep Apnea Stories, I did a lot of different episodes You'll find a longer discussion with Nathan and some other parents that were dealing with different things. One of the things we didn't talk about in our discussion is Down syndrome, like children living with Down syndrome, and how they do have other treatment options available to them. So the Inspire implant, the hypoglossal nerve stimulator implant, is actually available to certain kids with Down syndrome. Again, like that would be going to see a specialist ENT surgeon that does that. But so there is actually a whole episode about that. And I talked to an ENT surgeon about it as well. Now that we've done this session, we're going to have social media content and some different things. So Project Sleep will have some, you know, we're still at the beginning of our sleep apnea program, but we'll be adding more resources. I'm not aware of ASAP or WSCN having particular pediatric resources, but they're good, you know, nonprofits in the space. I just like to mention every time that we have a campaign called Sleep Apnea, Let's Face It, which is a campaign aimed at shattering stereotypes and showcasing the real faces of people with sleep apnea. A lot of our delays to diagnosis come from lack of awareness in the public, but also even medical professionals that are missing some of these signs and symptoms. So if you would like to take part, you can print our sign and take a photo, post it to social media, and make sure you tag us. And then we also have a sleep helpline. So if you have any questions to do with your sleep, you can always call our sleep helpline. It's completely free. And our helpline manager, Heather, is really wonderful and can connect people. Especially if you are looking for resources in your area, maybe you're looking for an AASM accredited sleep center or something like that, she can help hook you up with that. We have the Rising Voices program, which is training people living with sleep disorders or their family members, Nathan, to complete this program. It takes place over the summer, and it really takes people living with sleep disorders and turns them into patient advocates, able to share their stories and in their community, but also in the media. And we just like to amplify people's stories as much as we can. Oh, and thank you so much to anyone watching who is one of our individual donors. We couldn't do our work without them. We also have a new program called the Starlight Society, where people are doing monthly giving. So you can see our website for details on that if you're interested. Also, super grateful to our corporate sponsors, ApneaMed, Axsome, Lilly, and ResMed. We couldn't do our work without you. And of course, we'll be working hard on doing a toolkit for this session we just did today. So you can follow along. And if you sign up for e-updates, you get those toolkits sent straight to your email. So as soon as they're released. So being on our email list is the best way to stay in touch with everything that we're doing. I've done 3 Coffee with Emma sessions. So that is a monthly Zoom call for sleep apnea support. It's completely free, but you do need to register. So again, if you're on our email list, you get all the details for that. So it's been really wonderful to connect with the community and just answer as many questions as possible, give out resources, and just hear from everybody. I love it. It's my favorite thing. So thank you so much to everybody that tuned in, and we'll see you next time.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.